This is Hard Facts.
99.3 FM, Nigeria Info. You're still tuned in to your number one radio station for talk. It's Hard Facts with Sandra Ezekwesili. My name is Ezugu Chukwudi. As usual, after the news at 5 p.m., we bring you the big hard facts. And on the show today, we turn attention to a very important subject. Now, as a Nigerian who resides in, work or do business in any state across Nigeria, especially the 28 states that gubernatorial elections will hold in 2023, what exactly are the qualities that you look out for and the specs of an individual who present themselves to serve your interest in their capacity as the executive governor of your state? Now, I'm sure that many of our listeners are rubbing their palms and eagerly waiting to join the conversation. But first, I will be speaking with Mr. Akin Braithwaite, the governorship candidate of the African Democratic Congress, ADC. He says he wants to preside over the administrative affairs of Lagos State in service to Lagos residents come May 29th, 2023. Good evening, Mr. Akin. Welcome to the show.
Good evening, Chukwudi. Thank you.
Yes. So before we proceed with the discussion, I think it's important that we set a background for the conversation. Now, a lot of people would look at Lagos and they think it is the ruling All Progressives Congress or the not too major opposition People's Democratic Party. They forget entirely that there are other political parties, you know, that are making their mark in Lagos State. Well, we cannot blame some of these people, because for them, if you do not have a say or you do not have a representative in the State House of Assembly or in whatever position, you know, they deem very important, they would consider the political party as practically non-existent. Today on the show, we would, you know, share insight with respect to what your political party or the political party that you represent or you seek to serve the people of Lagos on the platform in 2023 in your capacity as governor of the state, you know, are doing exactly, and their plans and policies in preparation for the general elections. Once again, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
I think it will be good to begin first with the inspiration behind your decision to vie for the exalted office of Executive Governor of Lagos State. Would you be kind to share the inspiration behind your decision?
Yes, I think my inspiration is really practically similar to what has inspired quite a number of people as well. And that it really was 2020 and all that happened. For those of us who are Lagosians and who live here, we probably were traumatized to a similar degree. And what then took place after that was the whole rioting that emanated from the killings and the violent stoppage of the protests. Now, for those of us who really are public spirited, we just couldn't believe that we had descended so low in terms of our national space and environment. And then right after that, you saw a number of people migrating out of the country. People were so afraid for their lives, and you could then generally feel this existential threat in the atmosphere. So the issue really was then one of, what do you do about it? You know, do you just sit in the armchair, send out WhatsApp messages, complain all you like? And I think it was very, very clear that we needed to do something other than what Nigerians tend to do the most, which is the armchair critiquing of it. And that's what really basically got me involved. I just decided with a number of friends that we should get into the political space, because the only way you can change things really is either, yes, going on the street to protest, or really trying to use the ballot box. That's what got me involved in politics.
Interesting. And, you know, very good to know that it's essentially about service to Lagos residents and in the best interest of the people who, the good people of this state. But let's talk about the platform on which you seek to actualize this ambition. Now, many people have spoken about structures. I'm very certain that, you know, the first person who comes to mind when we talk about structures is, Mr. Peter Obi, who tendered his resignation and defected from the People's Democratic Party. And the reason why I say this is because people look at the system and say, indeed, you will need, you know, to have structure in place. And to them, or the other people have come up with the argument that, you know, it's humans that make up these structures. People say, no, if we go by how politics is played, in quotes, in Nigeria, it's essentially about having some sort of base. The African Democratic Congress, ADC, is not a new political party.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not the first time that that party would participate in general elections in Lagos.
Correct.
But some people would say, if we look at the ruling All Progressives Congress and the major opposition, People's Democratic Party, is the ADC a strong enough political party?
Okay. You see, there are two things that you look at when you're talking about elections. You have members of the party, and then you have non-members of the party. So you have the general public who are voters. You don't necessarily have to have millions of members of the party in order to win an election. The appeal that you need to make is to those who are not voting, because regardless of the structures, and we love to throw around these words, you know, as if they really have massive meanings. These words, you know, to a large extent have become very stale. But ultimately, if you look at the two big established parties, for all they say about structure, inverted commas, it hasn't made any real difference or impact in terms of who is voting. Today, you have about 70% of the general public who are registered voters not voting. So that, I think, says a lot about what has the structure so-called done for them. And you know, you can be scared off by the Goliath when you just kind of take what is on the surface level. Yes, on the surface, they may appear to have, one of them said they had 40 million registered members. Now, what happened if at the end of the day, not more than about 15 million or something voted for their presidential candidate? So it's just blowing in the wind. So yes, we have a good opportunity to really wake up and start to, even with the minimalistic situation, you can actually grow people because you're inspiring them to join. We also need to educate the Nigerians and the Nigerian public to say, this is the reason why you join a political party, so you can make the impact, so you can take the decisions as collectively and say, you can then influence the policy that the party is coming up with. And then when you get into governance, it essentially becomes your collective will.
Now, I'm sure you would agree with me that for so many people, it's a feeling of helplessness and hopelessness when they say the major political parties, looking at their strength, are one and the same. People say, you know, they are same of the same. And so, is there really a difference? Like, we're stuck between the devil and the deep blue sea, or, you know, frying pan and fire. Now, others have said, well, you have other people who are not of both political parties, and these people, if given the opportunity, would, you know, do well. But it would appear like there's a sweeping generalization when people talk about politicians. They say they have one way, and that way is, you know, go through a particular process and try to grab power. Let's talk about internal democracy in ADC. I'm sure a lot of people are interested because, I mean, okay, they're hearing of the political party and they're wondering, okay, what do we think of this candidate now? The ADC and internal democracy, some people looked at the process of selecting the party's candidate from a pool of aspirants, and they feel like there is still this Baba Sokpe arrangement, or, you know, the person with the deepest pockets emerging as the party's candidate. Can you tell us a bit about, you know, internal democracy in ADC and how you emerged as the candidate of the political party?
Okay, so just to correct, I haven't emerged as a candidate, but I'm an aspirant.
Oh,
okay.
Oh.
So again, terminology, meanings. So an aspirant is someone who is aspiring to become the candidate. Right. So that very fact itself tells you that there's internal democracy going on, because you have someone else who is also running, and there is no Babasope. Okay, otherwise there wouldn't be somebody else, you know, going through a process. Today, in fact, there have been quite a number of internal elections going on for House of Assembly, House of Representatives. It's good to have that vibrant thing. It's just like being in school. You have a debating society. You know, someone wins, somebody loses, but you're still friends. You have inter-house sports. You're in the same boarding school, and you're competing blue house versus green house. So that's what we need to really get ourselves into. The idea of consensus really, to a large extent, is overdone. To the extent that consensus blows away democracy. Because what happens in consensus, in the Nigerian sense, is that a few men, bullies, I would call them, just go into a room and say, you know what? It's Chukwudi's turn, regardless of who else is, you know, in the running.
Or the qualification or capacity of other persons.
Absolutely, absolutely. So we have to get rid of that and say, look, there's nothing wrong with allowing people to vote. That's the whole idea. The thumb is the power. The power belongs to the thumb, okay? Power belongs to the vote. Let people exercise their rights, you know. And I think that's why we're seeing things have gone badly wrong with this delegate system. Because what then happens is that, and you know it's against the law, really, to induce, okay? But you're seeing it happening in broad daylight. Now, without the authorities doing anything about it, it rubber stamps it, and it makes it kind of okay. So that's another problem that we have. INEC needs to get out there and do its own duty and say, hey, all of those of you, we have evidence, you're disqualified. The minute INEC starts to do that, you will see that will kind of grind to a very quick halt. Now, the other way that we can deal with it is to make sure that using electronic means, in today's day and age, I mean, people are voting for Big Brother and all that kind of stuff using the phones. So you can actually apply the mobile phone and allow everybody in the party to vote. That will kill, you know, immediately, this whole issue of, you know, putting people aside and just coming up with the consensus thing.
Interesting.
The third element is that you need to have in the party people paying their membership dues. Once they're doing that, then it essentially means that they become owners. So it's like a public company. You know, you have the shareholders coming in and they take the decisions as shareholders. They may decide to have proxies if they wish, but they come in and they get the job done. And that's really what we need to see. Right. Yes, we need to bring back internal democracy.
All right, interesting. Now, before we delve into, you know, the problems that are peculiar to the Center of Excellence proper, I think it will be interesting to look at, you know, what you think about the qualities that people who present themselves for public offices must possess. Let's talk about some of these qualities and maybe narrow it down to the position of the executive governor. Because it would seem like, you know, because of the lack of education, voter education, many people don't seem to have an understanding and, you know the clear distinction between the executive and the legislative arm of government. That is why some people in the legislative arm of government would come and distribute grinding machines and the likes and say, and people say, he's connected to the grassroots. He's doing well.
Yeah.
Not knowing that these people are essentially supposed to be lawmakers,
mm-hmm,
that should make laws that would improve our lives and living conditions. Let's talk about some of these qualities that you would advise voters to look out for in their candidates.
Yeah, so if you're talking about legislators, they are not executives. And it is clearly wrong for them to assume the role of an executive, which is, it's not their place to really go and do what they call the constituency program and then get constituency allowance. That's actually unconstitutional.
Yeah.
They should not be taking the cash into, I don't even know how they do it. I don't know whether they receive this money in cash or it's just transferred to their bank accounts or whatever. But the public system should not, you know, countenance and allow these legislators to take money and say they're running some constituency project. What they essentially should be doing is that through the executive of their either their state or the local government, they are able to now say, right, that money should be channeled through an appropriation which should have come into a budget, and then they now monitor effectively and see that that constituency project is being done. If you go all around the state and you go through LGA to LGA, you'll hardly see anything being done. You see broken roads, rubbish all over the place. This is actually a filthy state, okay? And, you know, ultimately at the end of the day, this state has no business being on the floor where it is. It's really in the gutter, right? Because even the local governments are comatose. So the executive, what you expect the executive to do, you expect the executive to really be an empathetic individual. He cares about the people. He cares about seeing, because if you look at Lagos, Lagos wasn't set up last year. It's not like it's a new state.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But you compare it with a Dubai. You know, how old is Dubai? Dubai was a desert. Now, every government should just build on what the last government, you know, had in place. So really, you should see trains circumnavigating the whole of the city of Lagos.
But some people say it's not fair to compare Lagos to Dubai and not maybe Lagos to Oyo, Lagos to Ogun, Lagos to Anambra, Lagos to Kano, Lagos to even the FCT Abuja. That, I mean, if you compare Lagos to Dubai, then it means that other states in Nigeria will not even, there will be no basis for comparison at all.
Lagos state, if it were a country, is the fifth largest economy in Africa. So that's starting, so there's no basis for comparing. It's like comparing you to your four-year-old son, you know, and saying you ran just a shy bit faster than your four-year-old son. I mean, you know, we can't do that kind of ridiculous comparison. So we need to compare apples with apples in a sense, right? And ultimately, we're looking at a situation where we're now at the point where they've convinced us to accept the crumbs, the little bit. Lagos has earned over, in the last 10 years or so, over 6 trillion Naira has come into its coffers, right? Now, where, what do we have to show for that? So that's what we have to compare it with, that, okay, how much money did you bring in? What have you done with the money? Okay, and have you done with the money what we expected that you should have done with it? And where have you fallen short? You see, if there's no target, and if there's no basis for us, then what on earth is it that we're doing? We're all just living in the dark ages. Why should we have a Lagos where there's no electricity? Where there are generators, if you go to the marketplace now, you'll see generators stacked high. We probably are the generator buying capital of the world, which also means that we're pumping out so much carbon dioxide and poison, toxins. So we're not really a healthy state for the number, because everybody has even better past my neighbor, you know, and all of that kind of. We're competing with one another now about the size of generators that you have. Some people have 2 generating sets. In fact, some people have 3. 2 diesel, 1 petrol generator. That's crazy. Okay? That's really absolutely abnormal. And we have come to accept that. We've accepted that as normal.
So it's essentially about people who see the problems and are solution providers and would not just fold their arms and say, well, it is well. Our case is different. It is not my portion. It's going out to address the problems and find lasting solutions to them. Now, we're going to delve right now into the major problems that we're faced with in Lagos. People talk about, you know, traffic congestion, and the first thing that comes to your mind is Lagos. You know, we look at, you know, the Lagos State government and this new policy effective from yesterday, the indefinite ban on the operation of commercial motorcyclists in 6 local government areas and 9 local council development areas. People also talk about security, violence and criminal gangs terrorizing various communities across Lagos State. I'm sure you cannot wait, you know, to give us some of your plans and policies with respect to addressing all of these problems. But I'll just crave your indulgence that we would head out for a short break. When we return, we'll go into the conversation proper. Now, for those who are listening to me across Nigeria, remember, it is not just, oh, this is a Lagos conversation. No. Gubernatorial elections will hold across 28 states in Nigeria in 2023. So you should think about the qualities that you would expect of your representatives. And remember, it is not just two political parties in Nigeria. There are several others. If political parties are hell-bent on ensuring that people do not learn, when we talk about voter education, this is the time for you to be more responsible. Take it upon yourself to learn more. Try as much as you can to educate as many people as possible so that when it is time for us to make the right decisions, when we talk about nation building and national development, we are not going to fall short. Stay tuned to 99.3 FM, Nigeria Info. We will be back.
Welcome back to Hard Facts with Sandra Ezekwesili.
Welcome back to Hard Facts on 99.3 FM Nigeria Info. Time check is 29 minutes past the hour of 5 p.m. And I am having an interesting conversation with Mr. Akin Braithwaite. He's a governorship aspirant. I would like to put this out there. A governorship aspirant on the platform of the African Democratic Congress, ADC. He says he wants to preside over the administrative affairs of Lagos State in service to Lagos residents come May 29th, 2023. Now, I have several messages on WhatsApp, people asking, you know, what are your plans? What are your policies? We are definitely going to have that conversation. But keep in mind that this is not just a Lagos-only conversation. Now, as a Nigerian who is resident in any of the 28 states across which we would have governorship elections in 2023. For some people, they would wonder, why 28? Well, we have staggered elections in some parts of Nigeria. Like, for example, you have Anambra State, Ekiti State. There'll be elections in Ekiti in June. Later this month, you know, you will have elections in Osun. So we have staggered elections, Bayelsa and the likes. So because of these staggered elections, we are not going to have elections in all of the 36 states, so in 28 states. Now, if you're listening to me across Nigeria and you reside in any of these states, this is the right time to ask yourself that, well, what are the qualities that I should look out for and expect of an individual who present themselves to serve my interest in their capacity as executive governor? And it would also be good to say that, you know, it's not just presidential elections, because sometimes we get distracted. We all think about Abuja. Presidential elections, no, you would have gubernatorial elections, you'd have elections into the 109 seats in the Senate and 360 seats in the House of Representatives. Depending on the number of representatives in the state houses of assembly elections also. So please keep in mind that, you know, it's a great opportunity for you as an electorate to choose or validate the candidacy of people who say they want to serve you. Mr. Akin, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
Yes. Let's talk about your policies and plans. As somebody who says, I would like to serve the good people of Lagos, what exactly are your policies and plans if elected governor of Lagos State come May 29, 2023?
Thank you. I think I would like to preface that with a very, very important characteristic that I think the governor of our state must have. And that is the ability to care. Caring is absolutely essential to being able to achieve results for people, because you must come from that mindset that says, I really want my people to be happy. Lagos is a cosmopolitan state and a city that has a diversity of different types of people with different interests. And you must care enough to be able to look after the interests of the different groups that are Lagos. And that, therefore, is the undergirding principle behind how we've come up with the ideas and the policies that we would definitely advocate and push for. So where you're talking about healthcare, for example, Lagos has only 25 odd general hospitals. For the kind of size and population that we have, this is something that definitely speaks to the heart of caring. Because if you care about people and their well-being, as the Constitution puts it to us, you would make sure that there are enough beds. Because yes, we may pray all that and hope that nothing happens, but people will get ill. And everybody, it's your responsibility as the governor of the state to really look after the well-being and the health of your people. So in our government and our dispensation, definitely we're going to add a reasonable number of beds. I mean, the World Health Organization has prescribed a certain number of beds, you know, per thousand of people. By you have to have one bed space to 1,000 persons. So we will try and see how we can apply that sort of ratio, looking at the ability of the government to be able to pay for such infrastructure needs. But bearing in mind too that we also live in a world where there are other caring people. You find a lot of NGOs who want to do a lot of stuff, but they can't do it in a place like Nigeria or Lagos because they are being fleeced because of the agency mentality. There are lots of organizations that would donate equipment, hospital equipment, sophisticated hospital equipment, but they can't do so because, you know, there's somebody on the take blocking them from doing that. We definitely will encourage and have these partnerships with these kind of organizations that will help us to unleash healthcare. Now, when you also look at the spread of Lagos and the traffic conditions that also affect negatively healthcare, we will deploy what I would call the first responders. And these first responders will be made up of an army of paramedics who really have been taught all the critical elements of how to, you know, apply very, very quick help care, what I would call help care. So as they are, there's an emergency thing that's controlling them, and all these will be in different centers across Lagos. And those motorbikes will be equipped to the hilt with the different things that will enable a first responder to be able to save lives, because they will arrive on the scene pretty quickly. So our healthcare is going to be a very, very essential ingredient. There will be healthcare for the poor, because you see, communicable diseases and all that kind of stuff, if you're not looking after the people who are living in abject poverty, you will spread disease. So even in your own enlightened self-interest, healthcare has to become a priority. Okay, so there aren't even enough health centers. We will build out more health centers across. There should be health centers in every ward across the state. So there are definitely key deliverables that will go in right as we start off. Another key aspect is that we will look at the remuneration of the civil servants. In fact, if it's at all possible, we'll change their names from being called civil servants. We don't want to see them as servants. And I get the whole idea of service, but we want to see them more as partners. We will call them, they'll be known as civil partners, because the idea is that they're partnering with the population. Everybody in Lagos now partners. We come together. So when you're going to the civil partners, you will be able to deal with people who understand, as in Dubai, the king there says that the people have been told that the people who are in the public service are told that their job is to make the citizens happy. So that's the kind of mantra that we would want to push. Because you see, without a motivated civil service, you can't really achieve much. because when you go in there, I don't know how many times you've had to deal. I dread dealing with the civil service because, in fact, sometimes you come out of there crying. What you can get done in 10, 15 minutes, you'll still be trying to get it done in 1 week, in 1 month. We need to change their mentality. And part of the mentality arises from the fact that they're not well paid. The pay that they're getting today isn't enough to get them home. So if we have the opportunity, looking at the budget and looking at the situation on the ground, one of the key elements that we will do is to revise the pay of the civil service. Make them smile. If the service and the public service is smiling, then you know that change in attitude is going to lead to a change in delivery. Okay, you can't have somebody who's been paid a rate when rice was 3,000 naira, okay, and you're paying him the same wage now that rice is 30,000. All you're doing is that you're just creating the environment for graft. Because the guy has to make up that 27K difference.
True.
And he's going to make it off your back. So Lagosians are being taxed seriously. You're being taxed on the street. You're being taxed in the service. You're being taxed by the police. Everywhere you're going, somebody is taking an extra couple of thousand of naira out of your pocket. Okay? And you're working so hard to get by. So we will look at the civil service, reorientate it, restructure it, and perhaps where need be, we might need to kind of let some people, you know, go who do not really reflect the new Lagos that we want to see, the pride of Lagos. We will also look at transportation, which you mentioned, the terrible traffic. And for us, it's essential that we get as many cars, private cars, off the road. And in order to do that, we will replace with public transport that is absolutely nice, speaks of Lagos, okay? That you and I will be happy to just jump in a bus. We know what time the bus is going to move on the road, and we know it's going from A to B, and it's probably, it's nice and clean, and it's very efficient. So we will have an efficient public mass transit system, and it will be integrated, because Lagos is an island, but you would never believe it with the way Lagos is. There's a need to dredge some area so that you can circumnavigate Lagos by boat, ferry, or whatever it is. There should be points all around Lagos where you can land, okay? And as you land there, there's a train that can take you from that point to the next one, and then from there you pick up a mass transit bus, and then Lagos then can become a 24-hour city, because it needs to become 24-hour city if we intend to move it in terms of the economy. We want to go from fifth economy in Africa, we want to take you to the fourth largest economy in Africa, and it's extremely doable. So when you look at transportation, Lagos, you know, this is so embarrassing, you know, sometimes when you come to think about it, and I think it really comes down to the issue of whether people truly care, whether your government actually cares or not. In the last 12 years, we've not been able to complete a rail in Lagos State. We have, all we know is the colors, the blue line and the green line or whatever, and that's all we've had to hold on to for the last 12 years. I think that's really, really disgraceful for a cosmopolitan state like Lagos and a city like Lagos. And, you know, in contrast, when you look at India, and it's important to look at other places, because, you see, if you don't look at other places, it's like your mother telling you, oh, your friend came first. What happened to you? You know, I say, well, mom, you know, you didn't give me enough beans to eat or something, you know. Now, if you look at India, in 2014, India had trains in only one city. By this year, 2022, India has trains running in 18 cities. In 8 years, India has been able to put trains in 18 cities. In 12 years, Lagos hasn't been able to run a train in its one city.
Perhaps is the argument that, you know, there's a lot that one would need financially to put all these things in place, an excuse. You have mentioned healthcare, the civil service, and also transportation. And one thing is very clear. You're going to bring innovation in these three major sectors. You mentioned that there will be at least a hospital, a health center in
every ward.
In every ward.
Yes.
Now, as Lagos currently is constituted, looking at the 20 local government areas, there are 245 wards. For the LCDAs, there are 132 wards. So are we looking at 245 new health centers across Lagos State if we go by just the 20 local governments? Or if we do an addition of the 132 wards in the local council development areas, how many hospitals are we looking at? And this is not just putting hospitals together. You would have to commit a lot of resources financially into setting this up. Are these feasible projects?
Okay, let's put that in some perspective. And the simple answer is yes. And you understand it when I tell you this little illustration. There's a gentleman, an American, who I can't remember his name right now, but he's done something which is called a living legacy. He's dead now. And he decided that he was a billionaire. And he decided that before he died, he was going to give away 90% of his wealth. And he picked different countries around the world. And in one particular country, he ended up funding 300 healthcare centers in one country. 300. That was one man. Okay. So whatever we set our minds to, we can indeed achieve it, especially if it is essential. Now, remember, as I said to you earlier, Lagos State isn't just a five-year, one-year-old state. You're talking about incremental increases to all of these things. As one government takes over from another, you just keep layering and building and putting these things up. You're talking about just a building, a square, okay, that can take just how long to put together. You can build a square in 3 months.
But it would be okay, well equipped. Sure.
Absolutely. And I did say to you earlier too that there are a lot of agencies abroad around the world who are interested in giving us, donating, you know, a number of these things, coming into some form of a nice social contract with us. And we will get help. There are lots of diaspora Nigerians who would readily give of their service. You can also have the private sector. You know, once we are doing a partnership, all of these things are increased. You know, the population is 22 million, for goodness sake.
Interesting.
So it's not really necessarily about, oh, you know, can we do it? You have to do it. Because if you are really caring about your population and your people, just by the mere number of things, in everything, any measure you want to use, we're falling short. Is it number of buses? We're falling short. And we will always have an excuse. Oh, do you know the number of buses is going to take us to be able to let people have good transportation service? Health, accommodation, housing. Do you know how many housing units we will have to build to be able to accommodate people? Do you know how many China has built? China has built whole cities where there's no population. And then they take the population into those cities. So we have allowed ourselves to accept less than what is really standard. And we're holding ourselves to a below standard measure. We need to get out of that.
We need to get out of that. Now, talking about getting out of that, will it be fair to look at, you know, the Lagos situation and say, I mean, you just mentioned 22 million people, and every day you have people who troop into Lagos in their numbers with no plan of returning to their primary place of origin. It's like the old Nollywood story. I came into Lagos with a cellophane bag. I'm going back with, you know, an SUV. And people just say, oh, when you get to Lagos, everything will be all right. Do you think that, you know, the government is also having to shoulder a lot of burden and pressure, and you can just cut them some slack sometimes?
No. You know, if you go New York, they say, so nice, they named it twice, okay? It has everybody from all over the world, migrating in there, and especially my compatriots, my wonderful Nigerians. You have London that has so many different people that have migrated there. They still have to take care of it. You have to plan. You have to factor it in. You have to care. If you care, you will find a way of doing all of these things which you do as of necessity. Why did you go into government? You know, the whole idea of going into government is to provide for the people who are living in city, even if they're visitors. Okay, you have to take account of the, and then you do your projections. We've got experts, we've got statisticians and all of these people that are just sitting there and they're not being occupied because there's just too much filth going on. You know, it's a corruptive environment. It's not an environment that really is there to care about you and me. But governments are there to really provide the welfare.
Very true.
And the security of the people.
Now, I would like to bring in, you know, some of our listeners to join in the conversation. And you have answered the question of Daniel Adiku, who, you know, who said, for people who are looking for an alternative from the ruling All Progressives Congress that is in Lagos and the major opposition, People's Democratic Party, you know, that they would like to know how you do things differently. And I'm sure that, you know, your answers have been very straight to the point. But before I head to the phone lines, I would like to discuss, this is a major problem, security in Lagos, whether it is, you know, young people taking advantage of traffic situation to dispossess people of their valuables in traffic, or violent criminal gangs. In fact, there are several cult gangs, you know, in across Lagos, in virtually every local government area. In Ebutebeta, you have the Freeman Boys, Willoughby Boys, Kogbagidi Boys, Awawa in Agege, 1 Million Boys, No Salary Boys. You just have a group of young people who just wake up one day and decide, this is our territory and we're going to wreak havoc and create problems. What would be your solution to this problem of insecurity in Lagos and violent criminal gangs?
Okay, so I'll use that word again. I would care. When you don't care, you just let things fester and you only deal with them, like this motorcycle issue, once they've become sort of a festering sore. You have to care right from the point at which you see the thing beginning to emanate. When you're going down the road, you know, many days going down to my axis, you see a lot of these young boys, okay, just loitering around on the road. Now, any responsible government knows that this is a time bomb just ticking to happen, because small boys will become teenage, they become big boys, and all that goes along with it. There's a term called bostile care, where you have to take young boys who are just on the street, and you have to, and the word care is there, to you take them into a bostile, into an institution where you begin to rehabilitate them. You think it is, that's the work of local government. Every local government where a lot of these youngsters exist that are just loitering around the road, couldn't care less about what's going on, they are the responsibility of government. Then government has to begin to sort of say, it plans for them. In your annual plans, you have to plan, okay, how many of these guys are you going to have to take in? And then what facilities must you create to enable these chaps to now start to have a life? We definitely would need to look at what is an existential threat. And actually, I think I'm the guy for that. I've had police training. I have a 3 months training. I'm actually an ASP, spy. So one has gotten an appreciation from the inside and understanding what security looks like. We would definitely have to have a law and order government. There is too much disorder in Lagos. We would need Lagos to, first of all, have an innovative approach to security, which has to be multi-layered. It will start, like I said, right down to the local government, the ward level. You have your neighborhood watch scheme. That neighborhood watch scheme will become integrated into the security apparatus. We would have things like drones, because we're dealing with a modern problem. And you can kind of survey what's going on from the sky. All right? So wherever these guys are, wherever the hot spots are and where they're hiding and all that, you can actually pick them up, you know, from the sky. Mark those areas and then you just zoom in on them and you do whatever is necessary to be done, you know, in that situation.
Interesting. Now that we are pressed for time and my phone lines are ringing, but I'd like to ask this question.
Yeah.
Now, on the Big Three today, I discussed the enforcement of the ban on the indefinite ban on the operation of commercial motorcyclists. And a lot of the people that reached out expressed their reservations about the success, because they say this is not the first time that we, you know, have had this in place. I'd like to ask you in 30 seconds, do you think it would be successful this time around? And if you have the chance, what would you do differently?
What I would do differently, I won't answer the first question because we've all seen what the government, how it hashes things up. But the second one is that I would actually put these guys through a registration process. Each of these motorcycles, we would have installed SIMs in them.
Installed these, SIMs?
SIMs, yeah. We'll install SIMs. You have to register your motorcycle and we'll put in the SIMs. And these SIMs are capable of immobilizing your motorcycle. And at the end of the day, too, they can track. We can see where you're going. We can see even at what speed, the streets, everything. So it's technology, you know.
Interesting. One call. My phone lines are ringing, but I am seriously pressed for time. But what I'll do is thank you, Mr. Akin Brett, for making time to feature on the show on Hard Facts in the studio. And thank you so much. I'm sure I'll see you around. I wish you all the best.
Thank you.
In the forthcoming primaries of the African Democratic Congress.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. Thank you, Lagos. And we're going to have a wonderful 2023.
Amen. Thank you so much, Lagos. This is where I would draw the curtain on the show. It's been an amazing experience. I told you that at the end, I'm sure you'd say, boy, did Chukwudi give us a show. I'm sure that's what you're saying. Stay safe. Stay tuned to 99.3 FM, Nigeria Info.